Bruchim Havoyim. We begin tape number 15. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach. There is no family that doesn't have problems. There is no parent that don't have issues to take care of with their children, especially teenagers. A successful parent is not somebody that never encounters problems with their children. In fact, if a parent never encounters problems with their children, that's a red flag. A successful parent is one who knows how to deal with those problems when they invariably and inevitably crop up. And problems are natural when dealing with teenagers. Rambam states in Mori Nevuchim that the adolescent's physicality, his being an adolescent, is an obstacle to spiritual attainment, obstacle to his ruchnius. And so, as good parents, we have to be prepared when the problems arise. And this evening we're going to start speaking about how to deal with average, everyday teenage problems. And the first thing we have to determine when dealing with teenage problems is A, what exactly is the problem? And B, whose problem it really is. Now, this may seem superfluous to some, because of course we know what the problem is. If we wouldn't know what the problem is, then we wouldn't know we have a problem. And if a teenager drives his car into the garage door, pow, then of course we know what the problem is. The problem is we have a broken garage door. And of course we know whose problem it is. It's my problem because I own the garage door. It's not so simple. And in fact, it's not that way at all. First, we're going to deal with the concept called ownership of a problem. Choshen Mishpat, the bailus over a problem. Let's say your teenager comes home one day and says that his teacher gave him an unfairly low mark on his report card. He wants you to do something about it. Maybe call the principal, maybe call the teacher, maybe even put him into another school. Whose problem is this? Between the parents and the child, is this the parents' problem or is this the child's problem? I'll give you another example before we come to the answer. Your child comes over to you, your teenage daughter, and her little sister keeps marching into her room without permission. There's a problem. She wants you to do something. Intervene in her behalf. There's a problem in the house. Whose problem is it? Parents' problem? Because the rules of the home are being violated? Or is it the child's problem? Another example. Let's say your son breaks his curfew. And you told him he has to be home at 12 o'clock Motzoi Shabbos, and he comes home at 3:30 in the morning. So that's a problem. And again, the first thing that needs to be determined is whose problem it is. The difference between whose problem it is will determine, to a large extent, your course of action. Whether discipline is indicated or not, whether we allow the child to go through a life's experience without your intervention depends largely on if it's the child's problem or if it's your problem. Because you see, it's a good idea, generally, usually, to let the child experience solving his own problems. That's only the case if indeed it is his own problem. We don't find any advantage, no virtue whatsoever, has no positive effect to allow the child to experience on his own the creation of problems for his parents. If it's the parent's problem, then the parent has to take action that very often comes in the form of discipline. If it's the child's problem, so then the first choice would be not to administer discipline, but rather let the child deal with the problem on his own and let him learn something from it. Which course of action to take depends upon whose problem it is. Now let's go back to our cases. Child comes home late from his curfew. That's not the child's problem. That's the parent's problem. Because the parents have a responsibility to make sure that the child is coming home on time. When I say it's the parent's problem, what I mean to say is the parent's goals are being thwarted. If you want to know whose problem it is, you have to see whose toes are being stepped on, whose goals, whose objectives are being thwarted. This is an obstacle. This occurrence is an obstacle to whose desires? Well, if the child comes home late, his goals are certainly not being thwarted. His best interests are being violated by himself, because it's in his best interest to get a good night's sleep and to learn to come home on time. But we're talking about whose goals, not whose best interests, but rather whose goals, whose objectives are being stymied here. Obviously, it's the parents' objectives, because the parents want this child to come home early, because it's the parents' responsibility to teach the child to do so. And because the parents' objectives are being thwarted, it becomes the problem of the parents. That being the case, discipline, and by discipline I don't necessarily mean to whip the kid with a leather strap, but some type of discipline, some type of action on the part of the parents is called for. Perhaps a warning at the beginning. But whatever it is, it's a call to action by parents. When the child comes home and complains that the teacher gave him the wrong mark on the report card, that's usually going to be considered the child's own problem, because it's his goals that are being thwarted, not the parents. Of course, the parents want the child to get a good mark. It's the child's objective primarily. It's his desire to get a good mark more than it is the parents' desire, parents' goal that the child should get a good mark. Yes, the parents want the child to get a good mark. But whose goal is it? Whose objective is it? It's the child's. Child gets a good mark. The child is the winner. Child gets the accomplishment. It's his goal that was being met, and it's his goal that's being thwarted. In such a case, it's not always wise for the parents to intervene. Now, I'm talking about a high school age child, not an elementary school age child, who's incapable of handling his own problems. You have a child 15, 16, 17 years old that has a complaint about the report card. Usually the wisest thing is to let the child work it out with the teacher and the principal. Let the child learn something about how his teachers judge his performance. And let the child learn something about assertiveness. Let the child learn something about self-control. Meaning, when he engages the teacher in this discussion, he has to do it in a respectful manner. It's very much to the child's interest to be able to do this on his own if he can. Now, of course, if you feel that the school is being totally unfair and parental intervention is necessary, then that's a second step, possibly. But that's not our first choice. The reason why it's not our first choice is because it's not the parents' problem. Yes, the parents are concerned, and yes, the parents are hurt, and yes, the parents are saddened if the child is mistreated. But that applies to all of the child's problems in life, and parents can't protect the child for the rest of his life. The job of parents, of teenagers, well, the job of parents of teenagers is to try to help put themselves out of business. Try to help the child from taking that step from being a child to being an adult. After an adult, then he takes care of himself. Teenagers are in between. They start as children, they end off as adults. Girls very often are married and out of the house before they finish being teenagers. And so it's the parents' job to try to get the teenagers to be able to take care of life, take care of responsibility on their own as much as could be expected. In other words, it's the parents' job to try to put themselves out of business, make themselves needed less and less. And so it's usually wise to let the child learn from his own problems and learn to deal with them. The case where the child smashed the car into the garage door, that's the parents' problem, because the parents' goals were thwarted. They have a broken garage door. They have a responsibility to teach the child how to drive properly, and I'm not talking where he did it on purpose. And so action on the part of parents is necessary. I'm talking in a case where he did it through negligence. Where your daughter complains that her little sister keeps traipsing into her room without permission, that's the child's problem, not the parent's problem. The child's goal to privacy is being thwarted, is being stepped on. And, well, the first choice, if possible, is to let your teenage son or daughter handle it on their own. Now, if we're dealing with a four-year-old who keeps traipsing into the room, we don't want, first of all, the teenager to act like a mother. We want to make sure that things are done properly. And if that's not going to be the case, then we have no choice but to let the parents intervene. But the best choice, the first choice, if possible, with the people, with the children that we're dealing with, is to let the child deal with it on his own. Or to give him advice, to give him counsel, to give him help, give him an etzah. The parental intervention is a second step, an if necessary step. Now this is a very important lesson for children to learn, that certain problems belong to them, that they should learn to deal with it, and that certain problems, certain actions that they cause or that they commit, actions that they do, become somebody else's problem, and that somebody else will take action. You know, we have a halacha in the Torah, it's called Maris Ayin. It means that I'm not allowed to do something that's going to cause somebody else to get the wrong impression of me. I'm not allowed to do something that's going to cause somebody else to think that I'm committing an Avera. I go into McDonald's to buy myself a Coke. The impartial observer on the street is not going to know necessarily that I went in for a Coke, and that's Maris Ayin. And if somebody gets the mistaken impression that I did an Avera, that's my problem. It's my Avera. I committed Maris Ayin. Now, he has somewhat of a responsibility, or more than somewhat of a responsibility, to judge me favorably, to be dan mi lekaf schus, depending upon who I am. The obligation to judge people favorably is also subject to many complicated halachas, just like all other generalities in the Torah. But I get an Avera. It's my problem what I did. This week in class, 12th grade boys I was teaching, and we were discussing the halacha of Maris Ayin. And I mentioned the fact that under many circumstances, it's permitted to walk into that McDonald's. In a case of tzara de gufo, which means physical pain or anguish, if a person's really very thirsty and there's no other place available except McDonald's, he's allowed to go in there. And I'm not talking about pikuach nefesh or a life-saving Coke. I'm talking just about alleviating pain. Well, let's say he has to use the Beis HaKisei in there. That's also Tzara Degufa. Then he's permitted to go into the McDonald's. Well, let's say there's a loss of money involved. There are Poiskin who hold that he's allowed to go into the McDonald's for a Hefsid Meruba. And a boy raises his hand and he says, but I don't understand. The guy that's watching in the street doesn't know that when you're walking into the McDonald's you have a Heter. He doesn't know that you're going in for Tzara Degufa when you drink that Coke. How is he supposed to figure out if you're doing it because you're very thirsty or you're just a little thirsty? If it's Tzara Degufa or not Tzara Degufa, it's still the same Maris Ayin. It's a good question. No, it's not. The answer is because after a certain point, the halacha says that it now becomes the problem of the observer. It's not my problem anymore. I was entitled to walk in there. And if this person gets the wrong impression, you're right. It's a very bad thing for him to think that I went into a McDonald's. Maybe he'll learn from it to go into McDonald's. Or maybe he'll think that I did an Aveira. A lot of bad things could come out because of this. But it's not my problem anymore. Now it's his problem. Torah says that I have a certain responsibility to make sure other people don't get the wrong impression and they don't learn the wrong thing. That responsibility ends where the Torah says it ends. According to some poskim, there is no prohibition of Maris Ayin if somebody's going to think I did an Issa D'Rabbanon. It only applies if they're going to think I did an Issa D'Oraisa. And although somebody's going to think I did an Issa D'Rabbanon, so he may learn the wrong thing, but now, because the halacha permits me to do it, it now becomes his problem, not my problem. The observer also has responsibilities. I can't carry the whole world on my shoulders to make sure that my actions are so clear that nobody learns the wrong thing from them. To a certain extent, Chazal gave me a responsibility. But maybe even midiraisa, v'heyisem nikiyim. But after the parameters of the halacha say that my action is permitted, it now becomes the observer's problem and the observer's responsibility. Very often, in learning Torah, in halacha, we come up with this type of dichotomy, or rather this type of division of responsibility, that I'm responsible to a certain extent for your reaction, but to a further extent you're responsible for your own reaction. What's the halacha? If somebody comes over to you and insults you, violates Oinoz Devorim, and is antagonizing you, well, two wrongs don't make a right, correct? The halacha is, in the Sefer HaChinuch it says this, that you're allowed, after a certain point, to insult him back. Because a person isn't expected to be an emotionless stone that nobody can move. And I'll tell you a very interesting halacha. I found this in a sefer of a very big poisek from a previous generation. If A, there's a shayla like this. There's Reuven and Shimon, A and B. Reuven was insulting Shimon. Shimon got so incensed that he punched Reuven because he kept insulting him. And now Reuven comes out of Yom Kippur, I guess, and Reuven wants to know if he has to ask Mechila from the person who punched him. He says, do I have to ask Mechila from him? He punched me out. I got mine already. So the tshuva is that he has to ask a mechila for two things. He has to ask a mechila for insulting him and for causing him to get enraged to the point where he lifts his hand and punches me. Because to that extent, what he did is my problem. Doesn't mean the other guy was a tzaddik for picking up his hand. But it's my problem. At least we're shutfim, we're partners in the problem, that he did lift up his hand. One of the great lessons of chinuch is to understand which one of the results of which of the results of our actions are we responsible for, and which of the results of our actions is somebody else responsible for. The lack of this lesson, the isolation from this concept, is one of the big reasons why we have so many spoiled and confused children out there who, sitting in a classroom, won't behave and then blame the teacher because the teacher can't control me. It happens all the time. Teacher's fault. The teacher can't control the class. It's the teacher's job to control me. It's your job to behave? That doesn't go through the child's head. The child misbehaves, so in the child's mind, it's the teacher's problem. Teacher's responsible. Well, in a way, it is the teacher's problem because the teacher's goals are being thwarted, and that's why the teacher is supposed to administer discipline. Because the teacher is supposed to teach, and he can't teach in such circumstances. But why in the world do our children get this confused state of mind where they're able to blame somebody else for their own actions? The answer is because they were never taught this chiluk. They were never taught this concept that certain actions that you do create results that are your problem. It's your mess, clean it up. And certain actions that you do create a mess for somebody else, and whether you like it or not, they're going to clean it up. It's the aleph beis of achrayus, of responsibility. And the way we teach it to our children was the above. When actions that create a mess do arise, and they invariably and inevitably arise, parents have to chart their course of action based upon ownership of the problem. Now, there's something very important that I have to add to this. There are many different types of families among Orthodox Jews. There are American-oriented families, there are Hasidish-oriented families, there are European-oriented families. And in different families, the same action may mean problems for different people. For instance, if your home is run in such a way where the attitude or the environment is that the home belongs, quote-unquote, to the parents, the children are, well, tenants in the home. There is such an attitude. I'm not going to praise or criticize it now. There is such an attitude among many very frum Jews. In such a case, it may be detrimental for you to allow your teenage daughter or your teenage son to deal with the problem of his little brother or her little sister running into the room without permission. The reason is because once you claim ownership of the home, once you claim the home is yours, regarding all sorts of other different type of rules, you have to be consistent. And it becomes your problem because of the environment that you created. It becomes your problem because somebody's breaking the rules of your home. And your goals are now being thwarted. You see, some parents may have a goal to keep everybody in their room, and they consider it their goal because it's their house. And this is one of the ways they control the things that go on in the house. Other parents don't set that as a goal for themselves. They give the children more autonomy when it comes to the attitude and environment of the home. That's for each parent to set the environment and the atmosphere of the home according to what they want and what they feel is best for them. And therefore, the conclusions that I've made here about if it's the parents' problem or if it's the children's problem depends on a variable, and that is goals that the parents have set for themselves. Because if the guideline is whose goals are being thwarted, it depends upon the goals that you set. And so I just want to add that little piece in and make sure nobody thinks that these conclusions that I came to are etched in stone or that they apply all over. It's a general guideline, and the rule is that if your goals are being thwarted, it's your problem and you should take action. Otherwise, it's not your first choice to take action. It's your first choice to let your child learn from his mistakes and learn from his experiences. Now, there's another thing we mentioned, and that's defining the problem. Sometimes it's hard to figure exactly what the problem is. I'll give you an example that sticks in my mind about a Rebbe and a 10-year-old boy in yeshiva. 10-year-old boy was in the lunchroom on line to get lunch. And I don't remember exactly what happened, but there was some sort of altercation between him and some other boys regarding who's first online and who's second online and who's third online. The Rebbe tried to intervene, and one of the boys were chutzpahdik to the Rebbe. And as a punishment, the Rebbe told him that he's not allowed to eat lunch that day. This didn't happen in 1950. This happened 2 months ago. Now, this was a terrible punishment for the Rebbe to give the child, because you can't deprive a child of his lunch. It'll just make him hungry and crazy and incompetent for the rest of the day, among other reasons. I remember I had a talk with this Rebbe, and the Rebbe says to me, well, he repeated to me something that they taught him in Rebbe school, but was misapplied. He says, no, I hear what you're saying, but it was a good punishment, because a punishment always has to be mida keneged mida. It always has to have to do with the crime that was committed. And since the crime, the thing that the child did bad had to do with lunch, the punishment has to do with lunch too. I asked the Rebbe what the punishment for the child would have been if he would have cut into the line going to the Beis HaKisei. What would you have done then? Well, he's not allowed to go for the rest of the day? The problem is that the Rebbe misdiagnosed the crime. The crime didn't have to do with lunch. The crime had to do with chutzpah. Lunch was just an innocent victim. Lunch was just caught in the crossfire. The crime had nothing to do with lunch. The crime had to do with chutzpah. And even if the crime did have to do with lunch, what are you going to? You still can't do that. But the Rebbe misdiagnosed the crime. There was a problem here. And he looked at it as a lunch problem, a din in Hilchus lunch. And it wasn't. It was a din in Hilchus chutzpah. And it's very important for parents to be able to obtain this skill, to properly diagnose a problem. Because if you want to know whose problem it is, or where a mida kenegan mida comes in, or what action is appropriate, you have to know exactly what the problem is. The best way to prevent problems, or the best way to deal with problems, is to prevent them before they happen. Let's say your child, 17 years old, just got his license to drive. That's a frightening time of life for parents. Child wants the car. Clear and precise guidelines should be set beforehand. Who pays for the gas and tolls? Who pays for the tickets? When will the child have use of the car? What the child has to know about the insurance policy, the insurance agent, and the numbers? What about wearing seat belts? Who is he allowed to take in the car? Who could ride in it? Does he know what to do in case of a breakdown? Does he know not to pick up hitchhikers? If the child does any of these things, and the problem, well, unfortunately, the damage could chalila be done to the teenager, but it was negligence on the part of the parents, not preparing the child for the eventuality that the car may break down, and he should know not to hitchhike to the nearest station. Again, it's the parents'. Child safety is the parents' goal. It's also a child's goal. But it's also a parent's goal. And just like a parent is entitled to take action, if his or her goal is thwarted, parents have a responsibility in proportion with the right to take action. They have a responsibility to make sure that action will never be needed. One of the great rules of running a household is that your rights are in proportion to your responsibilities. And the best thing is to sit down with the child beforehand and to make sure that all these possibilities and eventualities are worked out and that he knows exactly what the rules are. Now, this is important not only from a parent's point of view, but when dealing with teenagers, you must know that teenagers live life based on one of the rules of being a teenager. And that rule is as follows. Listen carefully. It is always easier to get mechila than rishus. Again, teenagers would rather not ask permission and rely on their ability to attain forgiveness, because it's always easier to attain forgiveness than permission. So they won't ask, and if something goes wrong, I'm sorry. It's always easier to get mechila than rishus. It's a very, very big rule. It's one of the big rules of being a teenager. Laws of physics of adolescence. Parents have to nip that in the bud. Parents have to make sure not only that rishus is asked, well, they have to make sure that rishus is given for whatever rishus is given for to begin with, and that the guidelines are set from the beginning, so that mechila will not be necessary. So again, from two perspectives, parents should sit down with that child and prepare him for that car ride. Number one, it's your responsibility because it'll be your problem if chalila something goes wrong. And two, to prevent the employment of the teenage rule of physics. Because if you don't deal with the parameters of rishus, then you are going to have to deal with the parameters of mechila. Now, when this happens, very often there comes up the issue of trust between parents and children. And if a parent says, for instance, that if you're taking the car, or even if you're not taking the car, you have to call me, tell me where you are at all times, and come on the highway, you can't take this person in the car, you can't take these people in the car, whatever, the child will say, what do you mean? You don't trust me? Which is one of the teenage traps they try to employ when dealing with their parents. The answer to that is very simple. The answer to that is, I trust you according to what your actions, how your actions show you can be trusted. It's the parent's responsibility to be fair. And yes, if a child can be trusted, he should be trusted. But if it's a legitimate concern on the parent's part, explain it to the child. Say, well, the fact that you broke your curfew last week by 4.5 hours thus leads me to believe that I should be a little more cautious in the meantime until I see from your actions that we can go back to the original curfew. Not in an angry way, but rather in a calm way and in a way that shows the child that you are concerned for him, not for you. The reason why, if chalila something happens to the child, it's the parent's problem, among other reasons, is because one of the parent's goals is the child's safety. That should be explained to the child. I am concerned about your safety. You should tell him any rules we make about the car have to be safe, because I am concerned about your safety. There are certain things that are not negotiable. And things are negotiable. And again, it depends upon the particular set of parents and the particular child. But the general idea is, whether you're dealing with a car or you're dealing with any other issue, it has to be made clear to the child that there are certain problems that are his own and certain problems that are somebody else's. And it's very important for a child to grow up being able to differentiate between one and the other. It's the first step towards raising a responsible child, a child who's going to go out in the world and understands the way it works. Because otherwise, one day somebody's going to try to clean up a mess that he made. He's not going to like it and he's not going to understand it. Or one day he's going to make a mess and then point to somebody else and say that's somebody else's problem. Like the child in class that blames it on the teacher that can't control the class. And we should start from a very, very early age teaching this to our children. We should, certain experiences are theirs to experience and certain falls are theirs to make. Certain times we don't allow that and we intervene. Very often parents don't know when to do which one. But the answer is, it depends on one thing. It depends whose goal is being thwarted and whose problem it is. When we do teach it to that children, that's the first step in bringing up responsible teenagers in today's world. Okay, questions can be handed up on the pieces of paper. Question. Somehow, no matter how many guidelines are set, it is impossible to cover every possible eventuality for every circumstance. And the manipulative child will somehow find the eventuality that you left out. What can be done? Well, the answer is this. Obviously, we can't cover every eventuality. Not in the first 15 tapes anyway. This is number 15 in a series of 1,000, so one day could be we can get to the eventuality that your manipulative child thought of. However, the goal of these classes or any type of parental guidance is not really to cover every eventuality. We say in learning Gemara that more important than learning the material itself is to learn how to learn. In other words, to obtain the skills that are necessary so that when you reach a Gemara that the Rebbe never covered, you'll be able to understand it on your own. This is called instilling skills as opposed to instilling knowledge. The objective of all types of life skills classes, and parenting skills are included in that, are to obtain the skills to be able to apply them in your own way, by your own self, to whatever eventualities come up. Now, I don't know what particular eventuality you're talking about, and it could be that it's something that you may find covered later on, or it may be something that will never be covered at all. It may be something that you're able to apply a skill that was learned elsewhere to your circumstances, or it may be that none of the above is true. However, the cases that none of the above are true are really few and far between. Because if a parent has a grip on the general goals and objectives and the general direction of parenting, there's no parent who's perfect, and there will be a manipulative child that will, well, I don't want to say outsmart the parent, I don't want to say will be victorious over the parent. There will be a manipulative child that will be able to escape the parent's skills. But with practice and with seichel and with applying other places which you learned previously, and with a little creativity, those times when the child does escape the parent's skills are really few and far between, and they're going to come and they're just part of growing up. If there's anything specific that I could help you with, I'll be glad to listen, but that's the general rule. Question, who owns the problem of improper dress or lack of religious responsibility? Who is really the loser, the parent or the child? This is an excellent question. really is? And the answer is as follows. If this were a totally secular class, we would say it's definitely the child's responsibility and the child's problem. Because the way the child dresses, if he dresses in a way that's going to ruin his reputation, now remember we're in a secular class, so we're not talking frumkai. If a child's going to dress in a way that's going to scar their reputation or smear their reputation, then that's obviously the child's problem. However, there is another factor here. According to the Torah, there is an obligation for parents to be mechanech their children. Now there's a certain level of chinuch that ends at age 13 where the father makes the bracha, Baruch shepatrani ma'oin shoshal zeh. There's a certain amount of responsibility that remains afterwards. And therefore, as far as the Torah obligates parents to make sure that children's actions are done in accordance with the Torah, it becomes the parent's problem, because it's the parents that get the aveira, not the child. It says that if a son is a rasha, rachmona litzlan, the father is removed from Gan Eden and sent to Gehenna to observe the fate of his child. And this being the case, there's no question that although it's also the child's responsibility, a boy over 13, a girl over 12, have halachic obligations on their own, but parents share that obligation, and if they shirk the obligation, then it is the parents' problem, because the parents are held responsible by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, after a certain point, after a point where the parents have lost control, after the point where no matter what the parents do, they will not be able to accomplish or change anything, then oynes rachmona patri. Then it's not the parents' problem anymore. And all discipline becomes futile. It's not even a shaila anymore, because the only shaila whether to apply discipline or apply action is relevant only if the discipline or the action will accomplish something. If we're talking where we got to the point where the discipline and the action will accomplish nothing, or, and this is more likely than accomplishing nothing, it will just make things worse, then the question doesn't start. Then it may be the parents' problem, but if the parents have no solution, then there's no question to be asked. And Oynes Rachmona Patri. HaKadosh Baruch Hu only holds us responsible for dealing with those things that we are, that are within our power to deal with. It must be understood that when dealing with teenagers in general, and when dealing with frumkeit issues, and again, there's no rule that applies in all circumstances. It depends on your child, it depends on the circumstances. But very, very often, force does not work. I mentioned the story over here, where one of the rabbonim in the neighborhood here told me that a balabas in his shul approached him with a problem that his 15-year-old son had smuggled a television into his room, a little television that he was watching. And this is a family that don't have televisions in the home, and so it was a problem. He went to Rav Palm to ask Rav Palm if they should smash the television, take the television out, but use some force to solve the problem. And Rav Palm said that you can't force teenagers to do things that they don't want to do. As a general rule, that's true. You can't force teenagers to do things they don't want to do. In the short run, perhaps you can, but very often the animosity that's generated by such a step just makes things worse. Parents sometimes have to learn to reset the clock. Resetting the clock means that you take a look at your teenager, and maybe he or she is not what you want him or her to be. The fact is, that's what he or she is. That's what they are, period. whether we like it or not, whether we want it or not, that's what they are. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to improve them. Of course we should, whatever means necessary. But we have to accept the fact, not be happy about it. We have to accept the fact that that's what they are. They now have their own guidelines. They now have their own desires. They now have the things that they are willing to do, the things that they are not willing to do. They have positioned themselves in a place where they want to be. And we have to reset the clock. What we can't do is we can't continuously perceive our children in the place where we would like them to be. We can't use the standards that we would like to use, but rather the standards that are realistic for the child as he or she is. It's called resetting the clock. It's a very tough step for parents to do, but it has to be done because you have to deal. I'm not saying not deal with the child. Of course deal with him. Of course try to improve him. Of course try to elevate him. But if you're going to be successful at that, you have to target the child the way he really is, not the way you want him to be. And very, very often that becomes a major obstacle to the parent-child relations. Are there any other questions?